Hello, everybody. Your ears aren't deceiving you. This is the All About Symbian podcast, and I'm David Gilson hosting. With me in Sussex is...
Rafe Blanford.
And in Reading...
Steve Litchfield.
And up in Edinburgh...
Ewan Spencer. I promise to be on my best behaviour for 4 minutes. Seconds, sorry.
No, you
do
see
apologize,
everyone,
David.
Yeah, the first time I'm chairing the podcast, everyone misbehaves. I just want everyone at home to know that. Okay.
Rafe hasn't misbehaved yet.
Oh, give me time.
Okay, this will be fun.
Oh, dear. Bear with me, everybody. Okay, so our first story today is Stephen Elop was making a keynote speech at the Uplink conference. And Rafe, you had the story there. Would you like to tell us all about it, please?
Yes, this is Qualcomm's Uplink conference. And Qualcomm, for those that don't know, a chipset manufacturer. They're one of the big manufacturers of chips that are used in mobile phones, along with the likes of Intel and Texas Instruments. Although I guess Intel isn't so much in mobile phones, they'd like to be. But anyway, this was a developer conference, and I think what Stephen Elop has been doing is kind of going round, giving his pictures to why he made the decision he did with regards to Nokia strategy and how the implementation is going, what are the priorities. And he's actually repeated it since this speech at Qualcomm's conference at the Open Mobile Summit in London, and it was much the same speech, just maybe tweaked slightly for a European audience. But I thought it'd be worth covering here on the podcast, and I'm sure the guys will have some questions and comments, so we'll get those in a minute, so it's not just me talking. But really, this was the story about how Nokia came to the decision it did. I think it's interesting to hear this directly from Stephen Elop, regardless of what you think. And I know there are plenty of people listening to this podcast who don't like the decision that he's made. I think, as we've said here on the All About Symbian team, generally think they did the right thing. Nokia were in a hard place. But, you know, let's concentrate on what Stephen Elop himself had to say. And, for example, he talked about the emergence of ecosystems, and he actually gave credit to Apple for that, and saying that was when they introduced the iPhone. And but Apple took an Apple approach and it was closed. And he then went on to say that actually Apple doing that created the conditions necessary for Android to happen. You'll have seen it quoted around the web that Elop believed Apple created Android. That's not quite what he said. He actually said that the conditions, i.e. people wanting a step up in user experience, meant that Google could create this offering and that manufacturers signed up for it. And he's, you know, put a slide up on the screen and said Apple is a closed box, and it's got a box on screen with the lid flapped closed. And he then put one up with Google, and it was also a box, and he said the flaps of this box are open at the moment, but how long they'll remain like that remains to be seen.
One question for you then, Rafe. He didn't put a third box on the screen marked Microsoft. What sort of box would that be?
That's a good question, Ewan. You're quite right, he didn't put that box on the screen. But what he said later on, which I'll talk about in a minute, was implying that the Microsoft and Nokia box would be more open to third parties, certainly than Apple. And I think it was really a case of saying, you know, seeing Android as something different because it's open source isn't necessarily the right view. And it's actually an opinion I agree with. I mean, there's been some posts recently about the Google litigation with Skyhook Wireless, which is doing a location lookup using Wi-Fi, and that showed some documentation which clearly demonstrated Google had quite a lot of control over its manufacturers in terms of whether devices were allowed to ship and what they're allowed to ship with. And while it's true that a lot of the Android code base is completely open source, if you want to ship with certain Google service and applications, you have to get an agreement from Google, and it's sometimes known as the with Google strings. And so, in my opinion, actually, when you talk about Android, you actually need to talk about two boxes, one with the sort of the strings, which is a closed box, and one which is open source. And what's become apparent in any of the shipping devices is, to be successful, you really need to have the Google services on board, the most important of which is Marketplace. If you don't have an agreement with Google, you can't necessarily ship Marketplace. And then that also starts applying to location stuff with Google Maps and Gmail and indeed others. And no doubt that will continue in the future. And that's important because those additional services and obviously the developer stuff is where the incremental revenue can come from throughout the life of a device. So, David, I know you've got a comment on this.
Well, I was just wanting to ask you a question on behalf of the audience, because this reminds me of a conversation we had a week or two ago. Because I remember at the time when the Microsoft Nokia deal was announced that Andy Rubin, who's in charge of Android, made this quite well-known tweet saying, well, words to the effect of all you have to do to use Android is pull from the GitHub repository. And I remember you saying that that was quite we concluded that was quite a disingenuous comment. And I was saying at the time, well, it didn't matter for Nokia to conform to the Google experience rules because they'd have been pushing their own ecosystem. It didn't matter. But could you tell everyone at home why that was maybe the GitHub comment wasn't quite as simple as it sounded?
Oh, well, I've sort of talked about it a little bit there with the sort of with strings, without strings. And I mean, this is a subjective opinion. I would encourage people to look into this themselves if they want to. But yes, it's absolutely true. You can take the source code and put it in create an Android device. And in fact, there are platforms in China which are basically branches of Android in use by Chinese manufacturers where they've done exactly that. But people wouldn't necessarily think of them as Android device in the way a consumer does, because, as I say, it's missing these Google services. And this kind of comes back quite nicely to what Elop said about ecosystems. It's not just about the hardware or the software on the device. It's the bits that go around it. And I think sometimes people miss out this point. At the moment, the ecosystem is just thought of as apps. But that's actually a very narrow definition. It's all the bits that go with it. So, for example, location, navigation and mapping. But you could also see it in unified communications. That's things like Skype, instant messaging and so on. You know, there are plenty of those kind of services. And obviously things like social networking services can also come into play there. And there's a lot more to develop there. I think we're very much at the beginning of that. But to take the Nokia example for it, this is actually a good example. Why didn't Nokia choose Android? And Stephen Elop did talk about this, and basically the answer came back that it wasn't allowing them enough differentiation. Google wouldn't give them a special relationship, which Nokia felt they deserved as being the biggest mobile manufacturer. Now, whether you agree with that or not, that's beside the point. But actually, location is a great example here. Google wanted Nokia to use their location services, so Google Maps and everything, whereas Nokia has this massive investment in Navtech, where they have their own location platform, their own data. And actually, it's probably better from an accuracy and completeness point of view than the Google geo database. I think Google has the advantage maybe on the search side. And so, yes, Nokia could have, in theory, taken the plain Android and put their own service on it, but they couldn't have been a full player in the Android ecosystem because they wouldn't have been able to use, say, Marketplace. And if they had wanted to use Marketplace, Google would have said, right, you can't use your own location service. And so for all the people that talk about saying Nokia should have gone Android, well, yes, they could have done, but it would have been very much as a sort of box manufacturer putting on Google software and services, not the assets that Nokia itself has. And it's interesting, Elop actually described this as the reason we didn't go with Android, because it felt a bit like giving up. And I think that's actually quite an accurate portrayal of Nokia's attitude, having spoken to some of the people involved. It was, if we go Android, that's effectively saying we're just going to become a commodity box manufacturer. We believe as a company we've still got a lot to offer. And it's certainly, if you look at the breadth of Nokia's assets and its R&D and some of the things sitting in the labs, saying it's just the same as Motorola or Sony Ericsson, I think, is a great disservice to Nokia.
And something else I've been wondering about is it does very much seem to be that ecosystems is where things are. I mean, I agree with Stephen Elop there. And it very much seems like ecosystems are tied to platforms. In an ideal world, I think I would like to see people stick to their core competencies. So phone manufacturers make phones with a usable operating system. Phone networks just provide access to the network. And then other third parties could create an ecosystem. And you can swap out the ecosystem on any device. The complication does come from apps, as you were just saying, Riff. You do seem to be tied. But, Amazon are doing it in the Android space, and they've got their own app store, so it can be done. There is a precedent. I was just wondering what the rest of the team thought about that.
I'll take that one, Steve.
Put a clap in, Rafe, and I'm happy to go after a clap. It actually drives me mad. I was just recording phone show chat earlier this morning, Rafe, and the way each ecosystem, if to put it in quotes, is entirely independent, and the Google and Apple and Microsoft would each love you, and Amazon, I guess, as well, each love you to be locked within their own ecosystem. I want to have an ecosystem which is the entire world, which is the entire mobile internet, which is the all the services my device can access, and I don't want to be siloed into one or the other.
I think what's interesting for me is, what is an ecosystem? I mean, you know, what is the platform? You know, interestingly, MP3, you know, you could argue, is a platform. There are various ecosystems out there that support MP3, iTunes, Amazon's Music Store, OV Music, the dark corners of the internet, and WooSound Russia, or whatever it's going to be called this month. You know, they are all platforms and ecosystems. They're independent of operating systems. Yes, people still need to write the client software on that, but that's exactly the same as something like, say, Facebook or Flickr. What's more interesting to me, and it's something that I think the mobile manufacturers are trying to avoid, is that these ecosystems have another component part, and that is the tribe. The tribe of people that uses them, you know, people are leaving Flickr, we're told. People are flocking to Instagram on the other handsets which allow you to take pictures. But, you know, I suspect that there's still the same amount of people taking the same amount of pictures on more phones. But linearly, they're the same numbers. It's this tribe has suddenly decided we're going to go from platform place location A to platform place location B. Now, Apple is a perfect obvious example of this. You have the tribe of Apple people, they're not going to leave. Android has that starting to coalesce as well. You have the tribe of people. Arguably Scion had that. You had the tribe of people that will never ever let go. So you've got this whole idea of platforms and ecosystems, but you know, it's like, well, it's back to the box. We're trying to create lock-in without giving you lock-in. You know, what does a Microsoft box looks like? I think it looks like a closed box, Ray, but I have a sneaky feeling that there's a cat flap at the back.
Yeah, I think that's quite an apt description in some ways. And I mean, part of the problem here is, of course, you know, the definition of ecosystem, open platform and whatever. I mean, I actually see platform as an enabler for ecosystem. And here we're really talking about ecosystem, the widest possible definition. And both what Steve and Dave were talking about were having a sort of ecosystem that's as flexible as possible. And from a purely structuralist approach, you know, I agree that is the way to go, because it, you know, gives as many people the option that they want. In reality, that's quite hard to do, and certainly from a commercial point of view, what the companies want to do is hold as many components of that ecosystem as they can. So Apple's probably the most obvious example of this, is they want to control everything in their ecosystem, mainly because it's about the revenue generation. For Apple, I think it's also partly about the user experience, but ultimately it does come back to making money. And Google does just the same thing, and Microsoft and Nokia are looking to do just the same. I think the difference is perhaps with Google, and probably even more Nokia and Microsoft, because they're going to be challengers rather than incumbents. They're looking to co-opt other bits of other ecosystems. And I think the link in with Facebook in the People Hub in the Windows Phone is a good example of that. And they're going to be doing the same with Twitter and LinkedIn. And it's interesting, Apple are maybe just talking to do the same thing in iOS 5. We'll have to see where that goes. So this idea of sort of an ecosystem almost being a reef which other people can build on is, I think, probably the way we should think about it. But there are different ways of sort of doing that building, and different ways will be attractive to different people. So I think that will be, you know, the major discussion in the sort of the debate of, you know, one ecosystem versus another as we go forward. But it is interesting to note that Nokia and Microsoft, one of the reasons, and this is what Elot was talking about, and John, he said, you know, why did we choose Windows Phone? It was the complementary nature of the, you know, two things they had. So Nokia's expertise was obviously in hardware, in making phones, you know, in factories and things like that. And that shouldn't be underestimated, because, you know, that's a kind of a vital component. And it's the, you know, the fabled Nokia logistics chain, supply and demand, being able to, you know, produce these devices very cheaply, ship them around the world, lots of points of sale, you know, 24,000, I think it is, in India. And then, of course, that also applies to things like the location, the Navtec asset, the relationship with operators. One of the things they talked about was operator friendliness. So that was on the Nokia side. Then Microsoft have things like the actual software platform, but also the office productivity. The enterprise in general is a very strong play. We haven't talked about it much, but I think people underestimate that as an asset. And then there's maybe lesser things like Xbox for the entertainment, and obviously things like Bing search and the ad center and all of those. And we're only just at the beginning. One of the ways that, you know, Stephen Enoch described this, I think it's worth repeating. You know, he talked about the transition from radio to television. And when television first came along, it was just two talking heads, effectively a radio show with a picture on TV. And it was only later on that the full range of television developed. You know, you started having sitcoms, you started having documentaries that went considerably beyond anything radio was able to achieve. And actually, if you think about it, that's still happening even today, you know, as interactive TV comes in and things like that. And he said it, we're at that same point in the sort of mobile. It's handed over from the desktop, if you like, or just from sort of technology in general, and we're only just getting going on these mobile services. The most exciting things haven't been thought of yet to develop. So having talked about all of that, Enoch then sort of talked about five key characteristics of the Microsoft Nokia third ecosystem. Interestingly, he sort of ruled out RIM. I think that's actually becoming more common now. A lot of operators are also writing it off for the longer term. Maybe a mistake, but that's another discussion. So what were these 5 points? And I'm sure the team are going to come in and talk about some of these.
There was sloth, gluttony, luster, shiny, happy, sleepy, dozy, dock and grumpy. Dwarfs are a sin.
Well, apart from mixing the seven dwarves and the seven deadly sins, you're maybe getting the right idea. Number one, the number one was, of course, delight consumers. And this was talking about, you know, doing things like the N8 camera, great optics, but there's, you know, a lot more out there to do. And, you know, it's the quality of the user experience. I mean, I think that's a blindingly obvious one. If it's not delighting consumers, you're not going to be able to sell it. So that's number one. Then he talked about completing the ecosystem. You know, that's the idea that, you know, you'd be contributing the various components I was talking about there. But actually said there's more to come there. And you also had to think about it, everything from manufacturers. So chipsets, obviously, at the Uplink conference, he mentioned Qualcomm, but also all the way up through, you know, developers, software, et cetera, et cetera. Three was operator friendliness. This is kind of an interesting one because operators are sometimes a bad word. You know, people hiss and boo at them. But he was saying that they're, you know, still play an important role. And actually, I agree with this. I mean, as much as anyone, I would like an operator as a dumb pipe, but that's an oversimplification because it doesn't take into account the infrastructure and network and everything like that. But he said, you know, what sort of things can we do? And that was, you know, operator billing relationships and how important they were, pointing out that if you had an operator billing relationship, a developer could increase his revenue 3.5 times, which is a pretty impressive statistic. But also things like RCSE. Now, this is actually something Rich Communication Suite. You don't need to understand the details of it too much, but it's to do with IMS and the way the network will work in the future more intelligently than just having a pipe. It's sort of, if you like, a pipe with properties that are able to dictate some of the service characteristics to be efficient about the transfer of data and do things in a standard way, so there's interoperability. You know, in a similar way to SMS as a standard service, you could carry certain bits of data in a certain way or manage them in a certain way, which is probably something that will need to be done in order for the network to work efficiently, because obviously there's a higher cost for stuff coming over the air than there is through a wired or a copper line. Then he talked about extending the ecosystem, saying this isn't just about mobile devices, this could be about televisions, it could be gaming platforms, automobiles. And so, you know, we're just looking at the broad experience to build out this kind of ecosystem. And he specifically mentioned tablets, saying, I don't want to be the 202nd tablet when there's only one tablet, obviously the iPad, in town at the moment. We need to be able to differentiate it from the pack, make it a serious contender. I think that was a pretty big sign lit up saying Nokia will be doing a Windows 8 tablet in due course, but not until it's ready. And as his fifth component, he mentioned developers and saying how important they were. And yes, that's a given. And I think everyone knows that about the ecosystem now. But it was interesting to see this specifically being mentioned. And he talked about the things that Nokia were doing in terms of free registration. Again, mentioned the operator billing, and talked about the number of users and the reach that Nokia had being pretty unique, and saying there's, you know, 60 million people, you know, going onto the Ovi store every 30 days and downloading 6 million items a day. All the numbers we've talked about before, and it's still growing, you know, 140,000 new registered users every day. And, you know, talking about the global reach, all the stuff we talked about before. And he was saying, you know, this is what we want to drive. So it's actually, I think, he understands that he really needs to take advantage of Nokia's reach in terms of, you know, allowing developers to reach that market. And that's a unique opportunity. And I think we've said on the podcast before, sometimes we feel Nokia's not taking enough advantage of that. So there we go. There is a full story on this on the site where you can read through all the quotes. As I say, it's Elop laying out his stall, if you like, and saying this is how it's going to be. And there's obviously still a lot of debate going on around. But I, for one, was actually pretty convinced by the argument. I think he made a good case, and you have to see it in the context of what's happened to Nokia in the last few years. And it's also this idea that we're going to have to let and see what happens, because obviously, you know, this is a transition period. The telling time will be, do they deliver a device in Q4 that's Windows Phone? What are they able to do with the portfolio and the sales in 2012? But for a relatively sceptical audience, I spoke to someone who was at this Uplink conference and said beforehand everyone was whispering about Nokia being dead and it was all about Android. And by the end of the keynote, they were suddenly looking up, taking attention, paying attention to Nokia and saying, we need to keep an eye on this. And honestly, at this point in time, I think for a US audience, that's a pretty encouraging sign. So there we go, a quick summary of that keynote. Afraid to be a bit long-winded on this podcast, but hopefully it's been interesting for everybody.
What I find interesting about this, Rafe, is for a long time on the podcast, we've talked about the lack of impact that Nokia keynotes have had when they've had to rely on the Finnish executive team, not just OBK, but basically right down there. You had this coming up and you would have this monotone and you would have somebody convince you that this is the greatest phone since sliced bread. And they, and you know, technically bullet pointy, it was great, but they just missed, I hate to use the term, but they just missed the X factor. And a lot of the times the press would just automatically give three red X's because it was as if Jedward had just appeared on stage. It sounds like Elop, one of the things that Elop is bringing to the table is another tone in his tone of voice. There is this sort of humanistic ability to sculpt a story around technical details as well. And I think that's actually one of his quiet strengths compared to what's come before.
Absolutely. I mean, Nokia have a message that they need to sell now more than ever. And I'm not sure, you know, the previous executive team would have been able to sell this. And I've actually listened to him speak quite a few times now to both very large audiences and sort of relatively select audience of about 40 people. And I've certainly been impressed with the way he engages with the audience. And he's a very good speaker. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And I think that could be a, you know, very key characteristic. And I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head there. Often Nokia has great things to talk about, but doesn't always communicate that as smoothly or as effectively as it could do. And I think that could be very important in the time ahead, because in one sense, you know, you look at a scale of a company like Nokia, and yes, they're going through poor times. Yes, they're, you know, undoubtedly having trouble, but it's still a very substantial operation. You know, this is not another Motorola crashing. You know, this is a much bigger company. It hasn't got that far down yet. The number of things it's still selling. And so a lot of the problem is just they need people to sit up, pay attention and give it a go. And I think that will be a key challenge for them. So with the move to Windows Phone, it's going to be sufficiently different that people will notice that it's different, but just encouraging to them, look and try. And that applies, you know, from developers, operators, consumers, will be a big challenge. And I think this kind of voice from the top will be very important in leading that.
Okay, so we've covered that subject very much in depth now, so we shall move on. Now, as we've just been talking about, one of the core aspects of any ecosystem is its App Store, and that's one weak area that Symbian has had with the Ovi Store, unfortunately. Although, we just had an update, 2.08, which brings the long-fabled application update. And we all about Symbian have been waiting a long time with bated breath for this to come out, and it finally arrived on our devices this week, and hopefully it did it yours at home. And Steve, can you tell us about your experiences with it?
Well, I hate to complain, Nokia, but we waited 2 years for this. And in hindsight, having an app store which didn't do updates meant that we were protected from all the things that could go wrong when we tried to update. So we've now got a system where you log into the Ovi store and it examines the applications on your phone. It examines the applications that were purchased or downloaded with your account, matches up the version numbers and suggests updates. And in general, it does work very well, and it's good to see. So I'm not complaining in that regard, but I have to acknowledge a few bullet points here. One is that there are some speed issues. The store seems to take longer to start up. Presumably, it's scanning your phone for the install apps. It's also pulling more information down from your account. There are update oddities, especially things like Gravity, for example, which you might download the 10-day trial version from the Obvious Store and then separately purchase it, get an SIS file from the author, for example, which is what I did. And then, of course, you go back on the Obvious Store and it says, hey, there's a new version available, not realizing that you've gone way past that. You've bought it, you've installed it, sideloaded the SIS, you've probably upgraded it through Yanoli's superb online over-the-air update system. And basically, the Obvious Store is miles behind, but it still insists it's got an update for you every single time you go into the store, which can be annoying. There are also other occasions and instances whereby you'd have in-app purchases, for example, in Angry Birds, in-app updates, and those don't get registered by the Obvious Store, which still insists that the versions don't match up. So there are things here that Nokia do need to pay attention to, and specific use cases for specific applications where they maybe need to write exception handling into the code so that these particular applications get excluded. Either way, it's a bit messy. I should also note that, as you found, David, that there are still some smart installer and Qt problems where applications fail to install, and then the process of diagnosing what's gone wrong and fixing it isn't trivial. And I do think Nokia could provide some more help here. And I know you wrote something about this. So was it on one of your blog entries?
I actually wrote a post on All About Symbian. And I'll just say, if anyone has got problems, the first step to always try is uninstall the smart installer. And then the second step should be to Google for my poster called When Beta Testing Goes Bad. And I think there's some other aspects with the Obvious Store that are going wrong. But just to pick up on what you were saying, Steve, I think it's just a simple math problem, actually, with the version numbers. Because rather than saying, if this version number is not equal to that version number, install this, it should be, if this version number is less than this version install, it should just be that. And other aspects I've been hearing from other people, I mean, they've actually been writing into your podcast for Phone Show Chat, and I've noticed it myself on both of my Symbian 3 devices, is this issue of people having to constantly re-log in to the Obvious Store. And I haven't quite spotted a pattern yet. I think it might be every time you reboot the phone. I did think I'd confuse it with my C7 because I often change accounts between the All About Symbian account and my own account. However, I have a brand new sparkly N8 here, which has only had my account on, and it's still asking me to log in quite often. So I think there's something going wrong with the authentication tokens, would be my suspicion.
Yeah, my current observation is that it will ask you to log in again if you change the SIM card or restart the phone, and it will also ask you to log in again, i.e. provide your password, if you try to download something or buy something, obviously, which is pretty much the same as on the Apple App Store or the Android market. It's even easier to do, but certainly the iPhone App Store, you have to enter your password every time you want to download anything. So it's very much in keeping with that. Rafe, you wanted to mention about download limits. Have they increased the limit now?
Well, this is just to say that the download limits are still, you can do 5 downloads for any item. And if you're doing an upgrade for an application, that will actually count towards your 5 limit. So I know quite a few people listening to this may have more than one device and have therefore downloaded an application onto more than one device. And so obviously if you do that, you use up, say, 2. If you then update both of them, you've used up 4. And if there's another update, you will then run out. So I think that's maybe something that needs to be addressed at some point. Now, obviously, that's maybe more of an edge case. And to be fair, all these criticisms we're discussing is more because I think we're probably power users, and obviously people listening to this podcast are similar, and you'll run across similar things. For example, the version problem that you were describing earlier comes about because obviously it can only keep track of what you actually download from the Obvious Store, and if you do things separately, it can't actually necessarily know that you've got this. Now, you think it might be able to look up in the system what the version number and things like that are, but that's actually related to the installer and some of the back end of how that all works, which means it's not quite possible. Obviously in other systems they've been designed from scratch with this sort of thing in mind, and so to a certain extent it's sort of, this is applying an update, a way of doing things that isn't entirely matched by the system underlying it, which is unfortunate. And obviously it'd be great if Nokia could do something about it. But just to give some of the technical explanation there, I think most of the time it's not an issue because the vast majority of people only ever download things from the Ovi store. But of course, the problem then does come if you've got in-application updates itself. I mean, of course, the argument today that then is if it's updating in the application, you don't need to worry about it from Ovi store. But of course, you can then have the accidental updates to a update to a lower version of the application if you use the update all functionality that's in Ovi store. So my recommendation would actually be, in general, don't download an application update if it's working as you think it should be, particularly for things where it's got its own in-application update. You know, just do it one at a time. I know the temptation is to clear the flags and have everything updated exactly as you like, but just bearing in mind the things I've been describing, that might be a better approach.
But you mentioned there about download limits to being 5 and updates counting towards that, which is just insane. Surely the number 5 is just a single digit somewhere in Nokia's code, and it will take someone all of 10 seconds at Nokia HQ, at the Ovi Store HQ, to change that 5 to a 10 or 15 or 20, and the entire problem will go away for tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of users and stop blocking up Nokia's discussion boards with people complaining about it, and it would take them 10 seconds to do.
Well, whether it would take 10 seconds or not, it's you would have thought it'd be a relatively simple fix. I mean, with the way these things roll out to servers, actually, it would take a little bit of time to implement, and presumably there'd have to be some kind of meeting and process to go through. But I can't help but think with the application updates, it would make sense to increase this to 10, 15. However, I'm sure the developers listening to this were probably going, no, we don't want that to happen. We'd rather have, you know, people not use it on multiple devices, or if they are using it on multiple devices, they should, you know, pay for a copy for each device. Of course, that doesn't necessarily work if you're using the same account in Ovi Store, because you can't download something. It doesn't distinguish between two different devices. And so, you know, it's again this kind of slightly broken way of doing things that's effectively happened because you've applied the application store model onto a platform that, you know, when they were first designing all these sys installer mechanisms, you know, didn't really have that sort of thing in mind. It's not really an excuse, but it's just sort of the background explanation. You can understand effectively why these things happen. And as much as irritating as it is, I would hope that, you know, in this particular instance, someone does say, yeah, okay, let's kick this up to, say, 10, because I think for the majority of applications and people, that should be sufficient. I think one of the problems that people have come across related to this is that if an update fails, that can sometimes be counted towards the kind of the download limit. So you can actually try and install something, say, 3 times, and that is enough to take you over the 5 limit without actually having installed the update. So I'd hope that they could put in a better mechanism for protecting against that. And to be honest, part of me goes, at this point, at this stage, given you know, there is a relatively limited shelf life to, you know, this system, at least with regard to Symbian, you know, the number of devices involved and all of that, I would be tempted to say, let's just lift the limit altogether. Keep an eye on it and see if it does get abused. And if it does, okay, fine, put it back to something like 20. But obviously, there are two sides to this. And obviously, I do tend to be sympathetic towards developers who say, no, we don't want that to happen because we don't want it sort of completely unlimited, because we deserve to be paid for our work, which, after all, is a, you know, a fair enough argument.
I think there actually is an explanation of why there is 5, Steve. It's because iTunes allows itself to be authorized in 5 other computers, and as the internet quite rightly points out, Nokia have no new ideas, they just copy them from Apple, so therefore the correct number is 5.
I think it's probably more to do with the fact there's 5 digits on a hand and 5 was a nice round number, but yes, I mean, I'd agree with Steve. At the very least, round the number up to, say, 10 or 15, because that will take away a lot of the trouble. And smart installer won't require, you know, it's been causing a lot of problems in terms of downloading updates. And again, that's kind of a reflection of building something for, you know, Qt as a technology on top of the sys installer base, or the way things work there, that just means it's, you know, not working as efficiently as it should. And I actually had someone talked to me about this, and the Nokia figures show that, you know, 99% of these installations go fine. Of course, people never complain about it when it works. But there are obviously so many installs going on, you know, 6 million items being downloaded today, of which I imagine a significant portion are Qt and therefore smart installer powered. you know, that you do get these problems coming up. We should probably do a post summarising all the problems, but as David said, the immediate thing is to uninstall Smart Installer from the applications on your phone. If you're having a phone that's an item in OBVStore that's stuck and saying it's installed when it's not, you can actually log on to the OBVStore site on your PC, look at My Stuff, and you can actually delete an item from My Stuff, and that will then reset things on the OBVStore. You don't need to uninstall the whole client on the phone, and that should then solve the problem. So yeah, there you go, there's another handy tip. I'd actually say the very first thing to do before you uninstall Smart Installer on your phone is just check that there isn't a Smart Installer icon somewhere in your application list, because sometimes these installations get interrupted for various reasons, generally around network connectivity or someone pressing the cancel button. And by clicking on the Smart Installer icon, it will actually finish off the installation process. So that's the number one thing to check for. Number two is uninstall Smart Installer. Number three is remove that item from your installed items, and it has to be done on the PC site, and then try that again, and hopefully that should fix, I reckon, about 75% of any problems that people are having.
Right, now we're running a little bit tight on time, but I just want to get in this little rant on, just on behalf of a consumer. These download limits basically boil down to DRM, and any sort of DRM inhibits purchases. If you have to think about, am I going to lose my money on this purchase, you're not likely to do it. Whereas, say with Android apps, you can install them on as many devices you want, reinstall as many times as you want. You can just fire and figure out on a payment, and that's where we're seeing all the growth. So people from Nokia who are listening, please get rid of the download limits. It's another form of DRM that we just do not need. I see Ewan wants to comment on that in the back channel, so go on.
I do, yes. This DRM is a necessary evil in certain things. The problem we're going from is so many people are switching away from resource-scarce consumerism. You go into a shop and you want to buy DVD. There's only 10 of them on the shelves. Okay, so you naturally have a limitation of the resource. When you switch to the internet, you do not have that limitation of resource. You have an infinite number of copies of this application. And it's almost like people are holding on to stock control. It's almost like people are trying to think, well, what can the new ways and old ways do? Like, for a lot of people, that scares people. And I know people will rile in about the music people being absolutely evil. But for a lot of them, Napster really scared them, and they didn't know what to do. And they're like, well, we want to sort of preserve the value in this. And those times, the way to preserve value was to have a fixed number of things out there, because that's how capitalism had worked as far back as people could remember. Yes, we are moving into a new world now, and DRM is one of those things that's going to be quite interesting as we move forward. There will always be things that need to have scarcity, and trying to get scarcity into digital is actually a very, very tricky thing to do. It comes down to this. I mean, if you look at a developer could have an application in the OBVStore and see it downloaded by the same person 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 times and only been paid for them once. Now, is that the same person downloading it 13 times onto the same handset because of bad luck? Is that a website crew that's making sure that everybody in their editorial team has the copy of the latest applications? As far as they're concerned, they've written something, they've went to sell it, and they've got money for one, and it's been taken 13 times. Now, you know, DRM is it's a thing that people just seem to latch on as being evil by default. It's not. It's human nature by default. And I think to suddenly go, it's all down to DRM, I think is a big simplification of this argument. This is trying to find a balance point between consumer friendliness and earning money and earning income. Because at the end of the day, developers need to earn money to carry on coding.
Okay, well, without getting further into that debate, we're right out of time, everyone. So thank you for listening. You've been listening to All About Symbian Insight podcast number 170. Rafe, would you like to say goodbye?
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And you can follow him at Rafe Blanford on Twitter. And Steve?
Yes, and I've been reviewing this particular application. I thought it was going to explode. 101 big sound buttons. See it on the site. My review. Very nice little novelty application and not too many bodily noises. Goodbye from me.
And now that my eardrums are bleeding, that was at Steve Litchfield on Twitter. Ewan?
I've just got a complaint to make. Steve, you've had the entire episode. Have you found the rimshot sound effect on 101 sound effects?
No, I'm going to have to demote it 10 points in its score. Well spotted.
Quite right, too. How could you not have the classic noise on 101 sounds. There we go. I'm Ewan Spence. You can find me on facebook.com/EwanSpence.
And he's also at Ewan. And I'm at David Gilson on Twitter. And you can follow the site at AAS on Twitter. So thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Ba-dum, 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 ba-dum.